For the week of June 28th, 2020, this is Showbiz Sandbox episode 500, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And also in Los Angeles, I'm Karen Woodward. Hey, Sperling. So I've got a small correction on what we were talking about last week. So while AMC and Regal will be requiring masks, it turns out that Cinemark is not requiring masks at this point. So I just wanted to make that clear.
You know, I got to say, I'm a little confused, and I have a feeling it's because I've been watching too much of the Contagion and the Walking Dead things. I had a horrible, horrible dream.
Why? What do you mean? What's going on?
Well, I was first off, okay, I was like in the middle of a pandemic, and this guy who hosts The Apprentice was like a politician. And then, you know, my co-host, you weren't my co-host anymore. Instead,
what?
it was really like this like annoying, fast-talking guy named Michael, and he kept bringing up politics, and he wouldn't let me speak at all. And it was like, I'm telling you, it wasn't a dream, it was a nightmare, really.
Oh my God, that sounds terrible. I mean, but you know what I can say? Congratulations on 500, on your 500th episode.
Thank you, Karen. Why have you done this to me? In Birmingham, Alabama, I'm Michael Giltz. Sperling, what were you saying about annoying? I couldn't hear you. Annoying? Politics? What?
Nothing.
Yeah. That's what I thought. So, Karen, you abandoned me and left me alone with Sperling. And here I am, years later, still trapped.
I will forever be sorry for that.
We actually, when we were talking, actually in one of the episodes about having you come back, we were like, yeah, she's going to come back and be like, you guys are still here? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Wow.
What's going on?
500 episodes?
It's like the worst episode of Mirror Black. What's that show called?
Black Mirror.
Black Mirror. It's the worst episode of Black Mirror ever.
But what episode? How long did I last?
I think 4 weeks. You lasted about 4 weeks. You're like, I'm out.
No, I lasted at least 50 episodes, didn't I?
Oh, you were there for at least a year or two, a couple years.
And then you were like, yeah, this thing where I make
job,
money.
Yeah. Life.
No, honestly, you guys were so much better at it than me because you came at it from a different perspective. Honestly, I'm not that good on podcasts, I've decided.
Well, we all have our strengths and weaknesses, and you and I should have done our vidcast on TV shows because that's still needed. There still needs to be people talking about the shows of the day. Maybe someday soon we'll do that. That's for the future. But Sperling, what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, this week on Showbiz Sandbox, we are delighted to be joined by our once and future co-host, Karen Woodward, as we celebrate our 500th episode. We'll give you updates on social justice and the pandemic and how they're roiling the industry. On Inside Baseball, we'll talk with Karen about social media and the many, many ways companies and celebrities are getting into trouble with their tweets and Facebook posts. People, you know, all I can say is we've said this many times, put down the darn phones, okay? Call a professional. Karen Woodward's number is, actually, I don't know your number, but
I'm not giving you my number.
Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll discuss some of the week's top headlines. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on last week's video on demand charts. Now, Karen, you may not know this, but it used to be box office, but then there was this pandemic and now there's no box office.
Well, and there might not be a box office again in the future, right?
Well, hopefully someday, a year or two. Yeah. Yes. Though someday we'll get beyond the pandemic. We'll have a vaccine. We'll be able to go to the movies again in crowds of people. That future will happen. It's just not going to happen soon. But Karen, I know you have to step away for a moment. You're going to rejoin us when we get to Big Deal or Big Whoop. I'm looking forward to that. And right now we are talking about video on demand for the week of June 15th through June 21st. Virtually nothing has changed. Invisible Man is at the top of the charts. All the other movies have sort of rejiggered their order, but they're all the same. But how happily, excitingly, we do have some box office data. It's sort of a week behind, but we did get some North American box office data from last week. It was available really late on Monday, so maybe that'll happen again late today. We're recording on a Monday. 5 of the 10 highest grossing films in North America were directed by or produced by Steven Spielberg. Jurassic Park topped the charts with about $500,000, followed very closely by Jaws, also with $500,000, just 10 or 20 or 30,000 was separating those two. Also in the top 10 was E.T., along with two movies he produced, Back to the Future and the inexplicably popular The Goonies. So five of the 10 films in North America directed by Spielberg. As Sperling said, no wonder he still gets to keep making movies.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, like, why are people going to see it? Is it because they want to, like, take their kids and you got to see this on the big screen with the surround sound and
sure.
the big giant... Yeah, I'm wondering. Yeah, not that I'm complaining. I'm just wondering.
I would go to a drive-in to do that. And unfortunately, our local drive-in closed. But that's not the only place. In Korea, the movie theaters never really shut down, though attendance became almost negligible. But they've had their first big post-COVID hit. That's a great thing to think about.
It's the first blockbuster post-COVID.
That's right. Really? It's a hashtag alive. And it's
that's
a Korean
the name
zombie.
Of the, that's the name of the movie.
That's right. It's a Korean zombie flick. And in the first 5 days of admission, they passed 1 million tickets sold. That's how they measure box office attendance. That's a great number. That means you're a big hit. It can get even bigger. But that's a great first 5 days for Alive, about two young, attractive people trapped in a town that's been sort of cordoned off because there are zombies everywhere, obviously. And they're like, we're still alive. And they try to survive. So that's very cool to see. We're going to talk more about going to the movies later. But Movie Maker Magazine, they had a very unscientific survey of their readers. These are people who love movies, who are excited by movies, who want to see movies on a big screen. And they asked them, are you ready to go? And the vast majority of them said they will not be going to the movies. That is not good news for exhibitors. I mean, that is something you really have to take to heart. That's a worrying sign.
And as we've been talking, I hear that AMC has pushed back, AMC here in the United States, mm-hmm. has pushed back their reopening date by 2 weeks. And that's probably because there's not going to be any new movies for another 2 weeks. So
that's right. So of course, yeah, they want to open up for a few weeks before the big movies come, meaning Mulan and Tenet. And so they're going to want 10 to 14 days before those movies to work out the kinks. But every time those movies get delayed, their pre-opening or their prepping for that gets pushed back a little bit. So I'm sure we'll get pushed back again. I don't think those movies are opening in August. I wish they were, but I just don't think that's happening. But it is time for a social justice. Well, let's just go to a COVID update. Let's do that first. Cinemark, as we mentioned at the top of the show, they are not requiring masks. I was confused about that. Disneyland, they had a plan to reopen, and unions had a plan to protest that reopening. And they wrote to Governor Newsom of California and said they're reopening too soon. Well, not to worry. The state isn't even thinking of giving the green light until July, and Disney needs weeks to bring everyone back and prep. So there will be no reopening yet for Disneyland. Disney will have a better sense of when they can reopen when the state tells them more. So they have been delayed. That probably means Disney World and others in the U.S. will also be delayed, but no word yet on Disney World. I know that Vancouver, they have released some protocols for filming movies and television shows there, and it kind of amounts to, I don't mean to be this dismissive, but when you read about it, they're kind of like, well, good luck. You know, you want to wash your hands, I think. If someone's sick, you should send them home. I think that's a good idea. Oh, and the border is closed. So
yeah, I didn't know how they were going to do that, get actors. You can get special dispensation, but the reason that Vancouver is so prevalent here on this is because a lot of shows get filmed in Vancouver, a lot.
And when they do, that will be a boon for local actors because it will be easier to draw on that talent pool rather than trying to bring people back and forth across the border from the U.S. But those protocols sounded pretty lame, pretty mild, and you know, something you could think of in about 30 seconds. We're hoping and believing that people will be a lot more strict than that. Those do not sound like best practices when it comes to filming protocols. You know, but people want to create content because at some point, movies are going to be released, but not anytime soon. Tenet has moved to August 12th, or as the AV Club says, they said Warner Brothers has hit the snooze button again on that film. They're just, hey, are we going to release it August 12th? Beep, beep, beep. Click now. Nah, August 14th. Beep, beep. August 30th. Beep, beep. September. Beep. October.
Well, you know, and Mulan kind of leapfrogged it, and Disney made no bones about saying that they don't want to go first.
I thought that was interesting.
Now they're not going first. They jumped to August 21st.
And that's right. The music festival Bonnaroo, they are officially canceled. And theater producers on Broadway, they are realizing they cannot even think of opening until next year. Broadway has officially made clear. There was one show that was thinking they could open in November or something. Well, Broadway has now said, look, no theater until next year. We are now refunding people who have purchased tickets through January 3rd, 2021. And Scott Rudin, two shows that he's working on, have both announced new opening dates. Steppenwolf's The Minutes and David Mamet's revival of American Buffalo are both planned to open literally 1 year to the day after they originally planned to open. So they were going to open in March or April of 2020. Now they're hoping to open up in March or April of 2021. So they are literally losing an entire year of theater. That's shocking. That is really for an entire year. Broadway wasn't shut down that long during World War II.
To give you some sense, I have tickets for The Music Man, as you know, Michael. And mm-hmm. so that got delayed. That's with Hugh Jackman and Sutton Foster. It got delayed, and my tickets are for July 21st of next year.
Yeah.
So more than a year away.
Wow. So that brings us, speaking of Disney World and all that stuff, we have some social justice updates. Splash Mountain, we talked about. They are now officially going to be rebranded as The Princess and the Frog. They're going to get rid of all links to the film Song of the South, including Zippity Doodah, and they're going to rebrand that ride as The Princess and the Frog. That was a movie that came out a few years ago. It was the first princess of color in the Disney franchise. It cost about $100 million to make and grossed $270 million. I think it's had a much stronger afterlife on streaming and video and all that. I think people have grown to appreciate that movie a little bit more than when it originally came out. It was a decent hit, but not a big hit. But this replacement, it's like a twofer. It's like replacing a statue of Jefferson Davis with a statue of Frederick Douglass. You're getting rid of Song of the South and bringing in your first princess of color. So that's a win-win. Plus, you get more money for Randy Newman. That's exciting. In some other bad and some more negative news, Russian film and theater director Kirill Serebrennikov has become a political prisoner in Vladimir Putin's Russia. He's just been found guilty of fraud, and he's soon to be sentenced to years in prison. This is all just a show trial, a kangaroo court. His latest film was set to debut at Cannes this year, just like his last two did, and that will likely debut in 2021 while Serebrennikov is stuck behind bars. So that is very sad to hear. But there's some interesting news in acting, and especially voice acting. A lot of people are dropping out of roles where they were voicing roles of characters who were of mixed race or of people of color when the actor doing them was not. Kirsten Bell, has stepped out of Central Park. Jenny Slate has stepped out of Big Mouth. And a lot of times it's happening with the actor stepping forward and saying, I'm not comfortable doing this anymore. Family Guy actor Mike Guy will no longer voice black character Cleveland Brown. And Kristen Bell, for example, she was cast in Central Park even before they had a character for her to do. So they didn't cast her. They had her first and gave her that character to do. But nonetheless, everyone said, you know what? We're not going to do this anymore. And The Simpsons, they had long-time problems with their character of color who runs the local grocery store. Apu, they have finally declared that they will use people of color to voice characters of color. And then there's Today in Blackface. A whole bunch of shows and people have been apologizing for little skits and episodes and bits where they wore blackface because they thought it was funny, because they thought they were making some sort of point. And they've all either removed those episodes from streaming sites or they've removed them from online social media like YouTube, and they're apologizing. 30 Rock, Scrubs, Community, The Golden Girls, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, and on and on and on.
I don't even know when those episodes. Yeah, who knew?
Yeah, well, I didn't, because I didn't really watch most of those except Golden Girls. I didn't watch any of those other shows regularly. So I missed it. And I'm thinking, do I just miss when people do blackface on TV? Because I think my jaw would drop. I'd be like, what in God's name are they doing? And I can think of one, and that's The Kids in the Hall. They had a character where one character played a black blues singer. And I'm not sure if he wore blackface or whether he was just lit that way and he just played what was clearly an old black blues man. And I loved that character. So that's on me. I did love that character. I thought he did a great portrayal. It was just an interesting, vivid character. It wasn't, you know, like Billy Crystal did on Saturday Night Live. He was romancing a white female secretary played by a man. It's five guys, kids in the hall, playing these characters. And so I am as blind as others sometimes to seeing it. But I recognized it when that happened and thought, all right, he's not wearing the blackface and he's not playing a stereotypical, you know, it's not played for laughs. And so I thought that was okay. And I'm sure now people would say, well, you were wrong. And one final thing that was wrong, people are saying we should rename ourselves. Lady Antebellum is now calling themselves Lady A. The Dixie Chicks are now just the Chicks, or as they've been known for a while by old right-wing male country radio DJs, the effing Chicks. Ah, the effing Chicks, at them again. They got a new album coming out, and they've said, we're going to call ourselves the Chicks, which brings to mind one of the great rock bands of all time. I hear Stuart Copeland, Andy Summers, and Sting are getting together saying, what the hell are we going to call the police?
Yeah, I was going to say, I knew that's where you were headed.
How would you know? How did you know?
I could just tell. I was like, oh, no. Where is he going to go? Oh, wait. Police.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I mean, what are you going to do? The Dixie Chicks, I'm surprised they're still a band. I like their music.
Why are you surprised? They're a great act. They're hugely popular. Yeah. They've just chose to step away and do solo stuff. Now they're ready to step back into the spotlight again. I can't wait to hear the new album. They're a great act. Got to chat with some of them once, do an interview. So I'm very excited. We're on the biggest country acts of all time, and I can't wait to see what they do next. I think they're coming back is a big deal.
Well, if that's a big deal, I wonder what you think about some of our stories in Big Deal or Big Whoop. Big Deal or Big Whoop is our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense.
Joining us is Karen Woodward, back to deal with Big Deal or Big Whoop. She stepped away while we were doing the rest of the show, and now she's here. She and I are going to go mano a mano and discuss the topics of the day.
This was always my favorite section.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you our first story. Do you own stock in Spotify, Karen?
No.
Okay, then we can talk about this because if you did, great, good for you. In 3 months, the company's value has doubled to about $45 billion. That's a lot of billions, by the way. And with people in lockdown and streaming proving it actually needs people on the go to be at its most profitable, a big jump in the stock price of Spotify might be surprising. So what's powering the rise? Well, a lot of hot air. Or, as they're commonly known, podcasts, to be exact.
Hey.
The company made a big play for the biggest podcast in the world. We had to say no, but Joe Rogan did say yes. Okay. Then it signed a flashy deal with DC Comics for original dramatic podcasts starring iconic DC characters. That means the company is currently valued at about 3 times more than Warner Music Group, 4 times Live Nation, and $13 billion more than Vivendi, and Vivendi owns Universal Music Group. Just imagine how much it will grow when they announce their next signing, Showbiz Sandbox. I hope I didn't break an NDA there by mentioning that, by the way. But anyway, Big Deal or Big Whoop?
Karen?
Neither. I mean, I think that the story of the rise of podcasts was probably a year ago. The fact that Spotify in particular, I guess, is interesting.
Yeah, you know, for me, the story here is how they are valued at more than the companies that actually create the content that they desperately need. Spotify is nothing without the podcasts and the music that all these other companies make. But somehow, the platform in which they happen to be played on, along with other platforms like Apple Music and Amazon Music, somehow their platform is worth more than all the music companies practically combined in some of them. You know, it's just
crazy. Do you
think
that's sustainable?
No, not at all. Tail wagging the dog, and they also are not really profitable yet. They're just desperately trying to, you know, the week to week, month to month, they're not profitable. They're just trying to lower the amount they have to pay for all the music that actually powers their service. So they want more podcasts so they don't have to pay royalties. We've talked about that before, but nonetheless, they got to pay a lot for the podcast. So at some point, they have to pay more. And it's crazy to have the platform be more valuable than the companies that actually create the reason you're there in the first place.
Well, ask Mark Zuckerberg how he feels about that.
Yeah.
How does, do they have to pay royalties on music if it's not listened to? Because if so, then they're making a ton of money right now because I'm paying them $10 a month and yet I'm not listening as much. And so because of that, they're actually keeping more of that $10 from me than they would be if I listened to 40 songs instead of 10.
Streaming is down a little bit. They realize that people need to be traveling, commuting to work, going for jogs, going to the gym. That's not happening as much. So yes, streaming music is down a little bit, but it's rebounded somewhat because people are starting to get out a little bit more again. But that's why they've been adding podcasts. That's why they're trying to diversify so that they're not wholly dependent on music. The more music you listen to, the less money they make. But of course, they've never made money in the first place. Karen, do you watch Quibi? Have you watched?
Quibi is a joke in my house.
Okay, good. Yes. Okay, it should be a joke. And in terms of Facebook,
Quibi.
And in terms of Facebook, you're just thinking, look at all the boycotts going on against Facebook for how they're dealing with advertising and content.
Yeah.
That is a difficult space to be in. But you know, it's also difficult to deal with sexual misconduct. We've covered it a lot in the past, and it's come back again. Here's our old friend, sexual misconduct. A number of male figures in entertainment are facing sexual misconduct allegations. Actor Ansel Elgort, pop star Justin Bieber, and comedian Jeff Ross are just 3 of the people we're tracking. Each face an individual accuser, and until legal proceedings begin or more people step forward, it's difficult to know when or how to tackle these stories. That's why we're talking about it now. In short, Elgort claims he and his accuser did have consensual sex, but he wrongly ignored her after that. Bieber strenuously denies ever being with his accuser and used multiple photos, hotel receipts, media reports to poke holes in her claim. Comedian Ross insists the accusation he slept with a 15-year-old in 98 is old news, and that she and her husband have been harassing him for years. Both Bieber and Ross say they will be pursuing legal action, and indeed, Bieber filed a $20 million defamation lawsuit. A fourth person, actor Chris D'Elia, is accused by multiple women online who say he tried to sexually engage with them, including one who was 16 at the time. D'Elia emphatically denies it, but has been dropped by CAA. Similarly, Oscar-nominated director Ciro Guerra, who made Embrace of the Serpent, is named by seven women who say he harassed them, while an eighth says he raped her. They came forward in a piece at Volcanicas. Guerra says he'll sue, but since the women are all anonymous, it's not clear who he would be suing. It's easier to talk about Hollywood producer and former talent agent David Guillot. Am I saying that right?
I don't know.
Well, he has been officially charged by police with 11 felony counts, including rape, and faces four women ready to testify under oath against him. Or we could talk about adult film star Ron Jeremy, who has been charged with three counts of rape and a fourth of sexual assault. Jeremy pled not guilty. Bieber is suing his accuser. It's all a big mess, but this stuff is still ongoing and it still needs to be paid attention to. But is all of this a big deal or a big whoop, Karen?
This is a big deal, and the day that we consider this to be a big whoop, it would not be a good one. And until men learn how to behave themselves, this will continue to be a problem and will continue to be a big deal.
Yeah, and you know, obviously it's a big deal. I mean, I do think, you know, this is one giant story that we've been covering, and there's many stories within it. So you have, you know, Jeff Ross and Ansel Elgort. I think the whole Ansel Elgort thing, you know, what irks me about that, I'm not saying he's in the right. I don't know anything about it. But I will say it was not picked up by anybody else beyond social media. Yes, it was picked up by a few newspapers, but...
Well, he confirmed it publicly, so...
Yeah, and he said, yeah, you're right. You know, we did. And they weren't... The age disparity was not huge at the time.
He was 20. I believe he was 20 and she was 17. His story did read as very, very creepy. That may not be illegal. There may not be legal proceedings that should come out of that, but it sounded very creepy. And I would be surprised if there weren't other people who came forward, because it doesn't sound like something that happened once and never again. But that's why, you know, an individual, it's a horrible thing to say, well, we don't want to talk about a lot when it's just one person. It's like, you want to listen to their story. They deserve to be heard. They deserve to have any legal proceedings if necessary. But when we're casually talking about people's reputation and careers,
right,
it's hard when just one person comes forward. It's much nicer when you have four, six, or eight people go, aha, now well, I can put aside any fears of, you know, it's like, no, four, six, eight people don't come forward when you're a good person. That just doesn't happen.
Totally agree. And frankly, I'm tired of the narrative of it was consensual, but now she regrets it, or, you know,
right,
now she's just mad I didn't call her. I'm tired of that being a narrative to defend rape.
Yeah, her story was very creepy. She said she was crying and creepy, and he says something like, we gotta score one. We gotta notch this. Oh, it was awful. It was just, you just went, oh. And he was just brand new to celebrity. He was just starting to become famous when this happened. And the idea that a fan reaches out to you and you immediately reach back and ask for nude photos and then meet them and have sex with them, that's a bad thing to be doing. Exactly.
That's
what Ansel Elgort did with this woman.
Oh,
she reached out as a fan, reached out through social media, and then he reached back out again to her and then met up with her. Not a good idea.
Yeah, well, that's what Chris D'Elia did too. I mean,
indeed.
And that's what I do with all my fans. Kidding.
Not a funny joke.
Well, Karen, nothing has changed. My jokes still aren't funny.
True. To that.
but from sexual misconduct to age discrimination, Hollywood and society have a lot of work to do, but a law passed by the state of California won't be part of the solution. An appeals court has upheld a ruling that says the law targeting the Internet Movie Database is unconstitutional. It tried to block IMDb from publishing accurate, publicly available information about the ages of actors. Narrowly targeted laws are rarely successful, especially when they target just one company. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals dismissed the law on six dismissive pages. California was targeting IMDb when in fact it was the actions of movie studios they wanted to change. It wasn't IMDb refusing to hire actresses because they were considered too old, after all. Besides, says the ruling, it's not actually age discrimination California is fighting, but gender discrimination, since male actors rarely face the same barriers. Big deal or big whoop?
Let me grab this one. I would say it's a big whoop because we all knew this law was ridiculous. They were trying to tell a public company, IMDb, you cannot print publicly available accurate information. That's crazy. That was crazy on its face. It targeted one company. It didn't deal with the problem. From the minute they announced this, we said, this is absurd. And the courts are at every step of the way going to confirm that because it was asinine and stupid. There's a big problem with gender and age discrimination for people in Hollywood, but this is not the solution.
I was going to say the exact same thing. It's a big whoop for that very reason. And although gender discrimination and age discrimination is very real, this isn't the big deal story to cover that.
Have you ever felt that, Karen? Have you had to deal with that? I know I did. I've been trying to look for a job in the last few years, and suddenly I realized, you know what? I'm old. They're like, you want a job? You're in your fit. Like, they think I'm about to retire. Yeah. You know, I'm in my 50s. I'm like, are you kidding?
Social media, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
the
yeah.
younger, the better.
Yeah, exactly. You're not 12. What do you know? Yeah. Nothing.
You're not over the hill. You're over the hill and right up the other mountain.
Over the hill that became a mountain. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm over the hill. I'm digging my grave.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll be talking about social media in just a moment. But my question is, was this ruling a jury ruling? Because if it was a jury ruling.
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
It was six pages of a ruling. So jury.
No. What I mean is the original ruling. Was that a jury ruling? Because I could see a jury going, yeah, that's. Yes, we should rule against IMDb when in fact, if it's a judge ruling, I can't imagine.
It's been upheld on appeal. So whatever it was, they've made the right decision. They weren't overturning an earlier judgment. Every step, it was just appeal because California wanted to fight and get the law in place. Every step of the way they've lost and they will continue to lose.
Well, speaking of losing, I said that without even knowing what the next story is. China continues to crack down on entertainment, making it hard for companies not based in the country to respond without alienating customers in the rest of the world. In a relatively easy step, China is cracking down on fan fiction, especially in the wake of fan fiction that spun out gay fantasies about a TV star. Female fans often create elaborate boy love tales, which are essentially chaste and romantic for the soft but appealing stars they favor most. The government will have none of it, but the crackdown involves more than queer content. Any content posted online that hasn't gone through the proper channels, even nominally private publishing companies, well, that content is then suspect or the apps that are created are suspect after that. The same goes for mobile gaming, as I just mentioned. Officially, all apps must be approved by the Chinese government. But Apple and others allowed people to sell their gaming apps and the like by using a placeholding number rather than an official government license. It was a slightly gray market, but in the wake of the crackdown on Animal Crossing, that gray market is shutting down. Apple is agreeing to the Chinese government insistence that all apps be approved in advance. Big deal or big whoop? Michael.
Me? Oh my God, I thought it was going to be Karen. I think it's a big deal, though it's a continuation of what we've seen in China. They do not like dissent. They don't like seeing freedom of expression. They allow a little bit of it so people can let off steam. That's why they allowed the gray market in mobile gaming apps. They wanted people to have some access to apps that were really popping around the world, but they always withheld the right to clamp down anytime they want. You're doing fan fiction? Okay, as long as your fan fiction says, you know, she is a god and a wonderful person. If you start to do fan fiction where they're describing things they don't like, they're going to shut it down. So that's what they're doing here. It's, you know, the more tenuous their hold becomes on the country, the harder they clamp down. That's why you're seeing what's happening in Hong Kong. That's what you're seeing happening in reaction to people's anger and upset over the pandemic, where they attacked and jailed people and medical people who spoke out. It's, you know, it seems silly to connect that to fan fiction about a TV star being in a boy love story, but it's all connected. It's people expressing their opinion and they don't like that.
Yeah.
What do you think, Karen?
I agree. I think anytime too that a tech company caves to a government, in particular, the Chinese government is always going to be a big deal. It's going to be.
Do you see a difference? We had a guest on recently who was talking about, well, China can do what they want in their own country. We can't control that. But when they try and get Hollywood movies to censor, like the showing of Taiwan or the Taiwanese flag or a map they don't like in the other parts of the world, that's where you have to stand tall and say, hell no. In this case, China wants to force Apple to not carry certain apps, they can do that as long, his argument would be they can do that as long as they don't try and force Apple to not sell that app anywhere in the world. Obviously, that should be wildly unacceptable. But is it okay to just say, well, what can we do about what they do in their own country? When do you stop being complicit and when do you start just being doing what you can to share the content that you have?
Yeah, no, I think that's it. That's a really good point.
Well, and by the way, we should mention the guest that Michael was referring to. His name is Chris Fenton. Does that name ring a bell?
Yes, it does.
Yes. No, really? How do you know Chris Fenton, the author of Feeding the Dragon, which comes out in a few weeks?
It's the Chris Fenton that we worked at William Morris with?
Yes, it is, in fact.
Oh, my God. Wow. Wow. Good for him.
He was doing a lot of business in Asia. Now he's written a memoir about his time there called Feeding the Dragon, and that's coming out in about 3 weeks.
And in fact, he did ask about you when we had him on.
No, he didn't.
He did too. He said, is that the Karen Woodward that worked at William Morris? And I said, well, is there any other Karen
Woodward? Well, you're still on the masthead of Showbiz Sandbox.
I know.
By episode 1000, we may have that change, but I won't hold my breath.
But you want to talk about laziness.
Though, it's those people that like you first started out in the business with and how you still remember those people. I mean, there are people that I worked, you know, later on in the business with, they'd be like, do you remember so-and-so? And I'm like, nope. I remember everybody from William Morris.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Ramses Ishak, remember?
Oh my gosh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, wow. Well, that wraps up Big Deal or Big Whoop for this week and moves us along into Inside Baseball, where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you. And guess what? Today, we're still joined by Karen Woodward, the co-founder of Showbiz Sandbox, who rode off into the sunset to conquer the world. Karen, give us the latest on, well, not only, you know, social media, but your career, your clients, and most importantly, your latest TV obsessions.
Well, I didn't conquer the world.
You're surviving. That's conquering enough.
You know, as most people know, I was working for a rather large cable and internet company while I was doing the podcast. Left there a couple of years ago, and now I'm back to doing what I do best, I think, is working for small businesses and micro-influencers and kind of people that are not, I guess, quite so visible as a large company.
Mm-hmm. And that change is because you like selecting who you work with and what you're doing more. You have more control over what you're doing and the people you're working with and the environment you're in. You feel like you're doing good work with people you respect rather than sort of forced to deal with a big, massive company.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, it's different when you work for like a large company and you don't have to jump through all these hoops to get things done and you don't have to get all these approvals. When I work for a small company, most of the time I just make the decision myself. This is what's going up today and everyone's happy with it. You know, and sometimes you have to run it by like, you know, one person, but it's rarely what I would have to deal with before. And I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but like, you don't deal with social media crises. There's no such thing as a social media crisis when you're dealing with a small company. Nothing they do is a crisis. You have posts that do well and posts that don't do as well. And in my experience is that's it. That's it.
Well, what is a post that does well and how can we get more followers on Twitter? And should we be worried about followers on Twitter or is Twitter over?
Well, first of all, can we back up and talk about my TV obsessions?
Please.
Oh, yes.
So absolutely. We're binging a lot right now during the pandemic. And I'm watching things that like I've watched before, but like years ago. So I'm like, we've been binge watching like Revolution. Do you remember that NBC show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Longmire.
Oh, yeah.
Blue. Oh, my God.
It started Rookie Blue.
Rookie Blue. That was I did not expect. But Longmire, I can respect.
Dude, Rookie Blue is awesome. And what's funny is that it's slightly dated because it was filmed before Me Too and before the Black Lives Matter like protests. So there's stuff that you watch and you're like, that would never happen today.
That's not the cops who were on bicycles. Which one is Rookie Blue?
No. You really think I would watch a show about cops on bikes?
Yeah, they call
it chips. It was like a Baywatch, but with bicycles. You know, they were on land. Rookie Blue is like the Grey's Anatomy of cop shows, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the best. I highly recommend it. Yeah.
And is it Canadian or is it American?
Yeah, no, it's Canadian. Filmed in Toronto.
Oh, very cool.
And they kind of like never really say what city it is, but they also don't hide the Canadian license plates. So essentially Canada for Canada without actually saying we live in Toronto.
Well, I've been watching The Good Place, and I haven't seen the fourth and final season because it's in another world. It's not quite available yet once it got off the air. So I'm sort of in a black hole. I watched the first three seasons, and I'm diving into Better Call Saul, the prequel to Breaking Bad, both of which have been very good.
I'm watching Upload.
Oh, I've seen the billboards for that.
Yeah, it's actually, it's interesting. It's a bit depressing because it's about a guy who basically dies and he decides to upload himself to this, like, to basically this weird heaven place where everything is, you're basically a digital version of yourself. So you're still kind of alive, so you get to attend your own funeral. It's just like it's weird and somewhat depressing, and there's like a love story going on. It was interesting. And now I'm trying to catch up on Westworld, but I have to say, I have no idea what the hell is going on that show.
I tried to watch that show, and then I decided I was clearly not intelligent enough to understand Westworld.
Any show where I feel like I have to take notes is a show I'm not interested in. No, thank you. And I like Complex. I'm fine with that, you know, but no. When the first episode, you're like, what? You know, no.
Yeah. No. Actually, it started off fine.
Watched a few episodes of the first season. No interest.
But then, like, the second season was all like, are you in the past or the future or the current past or the past future?
Or is it a multiverse?
Yeah. And then now they're like, are we in current time? And then finally, last night, I think I'm on episode 3 or 4, the Ed Harris character said, am I me? Like, he kind of finally questioned his own, like, am I a host or? And I thought, and the other lead character played by Evan Rachel
Wood,
yeah, said, is that her? Yeah, Evan Rachel, is that?
Yeah, she's great, okay. Yeah.
She said, welcome to the end of the game. And I'm like, what do you mean the end of the game? You've got like-
The show over?
You've got two seasons.
Like, you've got like 8 more episodes of this season. But I thought, well, that should have been the last episode because that was logically where you were getting to. But I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, proving that we're old, ABC has just rejected the reboot of 30-something. Apparently, nobody wants to watch 50-something or 60-something. No, not going to happen.
What?
Wait, 60-something would pretty much be everybody on Zoom, right? I mean, that's pretty much what 60-something would be right now.
At the moment. Karen,
I'm not sure that's fair.
Yeah. Well, Karen, while you were on the show, when we talked about social media, we often discussed how dumb it was for celebrities and companies to do their own social media. Hire an expert, people. Elon Musk, put down the phone. This week, we've got a couple examples. First, a racetrack owner that hosts has a racetrack that hosts NASCAR events thought it would be hilarious to post a joke on Facebook. They offered a Bubba Wallace rope for sale, only $9.99, and it came with a lifetime guarantee. Well, NASCAR said, we're not having our events at your racetrack. And one of their major sponsors said, we don't want to have any ties with you either. Other people, country star Chris Rice, he posted pictures on Instagram and video saying, look at the packed audience at my new concert. Woohoo, we're all getting together again.
Wait, and what? A concert? How was he doing it?
Well, he wasn't. Well, it was, you could have socially distanced, but everybody stayed packed in together with no masks. And so everybody online was like, you're all idiots. And he got huge blowback and has, of course, deleted his Instagram account and done all the usual things. Karen, why can't they realize the dangers as well as the opportunities of social media?
So there are lots to unpack there. First of all, I do think that celebrities and companies should be doing their own social media. I think that although we used to think that you should hire an expert, I think that most people at this point have an expert on staff, and you should do it internally because otherwise it's not going to be authentic.
But it shouldn't be like the CEO. It shouldn't be the celebrity, right? It should be their...
Oh, no, they should. It should be the celebrity. Yeah.
Oh, tell it to Elon Musk. Good Lord. You've made mistakes, maybe then you should learn you shouldn't do it.
Okay. But so what to me this really comes down to is it's not a question of why are celebrities and CEOs doing their own social. The question is, why are there so many assholes in the world?
They're just revealing who they really are.
And that's really what it comes down to. And, you know, people, you know, you can talk about the cancel culture, and which is a problem in itself, but a lot of these people, they have never understood that their actions have consequences, right? Because celebrities and CEOs and large companies don't have consequences to their actions. They are not used to that. So no one says no. And so when they make a mistake and they suffer the consequences from it, they either learn from it or they don't. And if you don't learn from it, then get the hell off social media. If you learn from it, I say welcome back. But in the case of like the NASCAR, that was clearly somebody internal who was just an idiot.
That was the boss, the owner of the racetrack.
So he's an idiot.
Yeah.
And he learned a hard lesson, didn't he? And that's like, it's like parenting, right? It's like we were all parenting people who are on social media.
And the interesting thing is they didn't realize their views were unpopular. They didn't realize that, or at least a lot of people who are reacting are saying, that's not acceptable. Yeah. That's not funny. It's not acceptable. Oh. And so they're learning, oh, you thought everyone agreed. It's like when someone says a racist or sexist comment at work and you don't say anything because you're uncomfortable and you don't know what to say or do. They think everyone agrees with them until you say, no, you can't say that. And then they get all huffy. But you have to. So it's a good time
to grow up and become good people.
You know, there was a recent where I live is suburbs of Los Angeles, and in the local high school here, there were two girls who mid-May were dancing around on one of their stories and their Instagram stories to a song that had a racial epithet in it, and it was like a 10-second clip, and that went viral after the you know racial protesting started. After Memorial Day, after, you know, the end of May, somehow it went viral on Twitter. And I guess somebody had recorded it and then reposted it because they were two white girls dancing around in a, you know, and the school was mentioned. High school had to like put up these, you know, basically it became a very big deal, no pun intended, because people were talking about going to the high school to protest and kind of loot the high school. The girls obviously deleted their Instagram accounts. One of them was a model, was dropped by her modeling agency. And I'm sure when they made that video, it was 10 seconds. They were bouncing around late at night. And
yeah. And that's where I think cancel culture becomes a problem, right? Because there are people that are horrible people and there are people who just did something really stupid.
And they're 14 or 15. How old are they, et cetera?
And I don't think 16. You destroy a person's life from that. It's a teaching moment. Without wanting to sound like a smug asshole, but it's a teaching moment. And but I don't think you ruin someone's life over that. I mean, it's kind of hard to comment on this because I haven't seen the video.
Right. I have no idea what you're just talking about either.
Yeah.
But I would say as a teaching moment, when you say people were thinking about going to protest at a high school, you don't follow that by saying they're going to protest and loot the high school. Nobody loots a high school. That's a criminal action.
No.
Sperling might use the word loot. It's like talking about a protest versus a riot. You don't say they're going to loot. Not a good choice of words, but it's a teaching moment. We're talking about cancel culture, Karen. And I feel like in general, it's just a buzz phrase. It's all BS. It's not really happening that much. There's a few very high profile examples. In general, I think people learn, you made a mistake. You learn from it, but you apologize. People will accept that and you can move forward. Woody Allen continues to make movies and have them released all over the world. He has not been canceled in any way, shape, or form. He just had a book published. He is doing interviews. He's doing exactly what he wants. He has a new film opening the San Sebastian Film Festival. So exactly, when you try to use cancel culture and your example is Woody Allen, that proves what a joke you're talking about. It's not happening. He's doing just fine. I think cancel culture is overblown, the idea that you can't say anything before the world shuts you down. It's like, sure, you can face an outcry. You know, somebody says something on Twitter and then someone else retweets back that they're angry. And you say, oh, look at that cancel culture. It's like, well, two people on Twitter shared a point of view. That's all that happened.
To me, cancel culture is when you actually like force the person to like delete their account or like, it's much more than just disagreeing with something. I agree with you. I mean, I think most people are good people and fairly forgiving and will realize that someone just needs to be, you know, taught a
schooled
lesson, I guess.
Look at that person in Central Park, that man who was a birder, the black man who was a birder. I think he went to like Harvard and Yale or something. But, you know, he asked a woman to put her dog on a leash and all hell broke loose from the video where she threatened to call the police and lie and say that he was threatening her life. And she lost her job. And this man was like, look, he was so graceful and gracious and like, look, she made a mistake. I don't think her life should be ruined for, you know, and she literally was threatening his life. I mean, that's not a joke to say, I'm going to call the police and say they come to you in the middle of Central Park and a white woman says, this black man is threatening my life. that really is putting his life in danger. And yet he was able to be gracious and kind and open and say, no, 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 please, let's not go too far. I thought that's, you know, like you say, most people are good people. People can make dumb mistakes. And you know what? They apologize. You learn from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, how do you get, you know, I asked this before, how do you get more followers on, and what is the platform of choice, whether it's Twitter or likes on Facebook? Yeah, I guess it would be likes on Facebook.
It depends on you, Sperling.
Yeah, what is the big way that that works? Do you have to pay money?
Yeah, it's
advertising.
Yeah, pay to play, for sure.
So basically on Twitter, what would you be doing? You'd be buying ads that link back to your Twitter account? And
I'm honestly, there are some companies I think that really definitely belong on Twitter, but for the most part, I don't necessarily recommend that people go on Twitter anymore. I think it's a really toxic place. Mm-hmm. I think that if you are on it as, you know, as a celebrity or an influencer or a micro influencer, I don't think you need to be there. I think that, and I know that you put this in the notes, that Instagram, use like, is it too big? I think Instagram is the next platform. What's the platform of choice? And it should be, because part of the reason that I think it's a safe place. That's one of the reasons why I think it does well. It's hard to share things. And that I think is part of the problem with social media right now, is that what happened on Facebook, what happens all the time on Twitter, it's the retweet. It's the share before people have even read anything.
And Instagram, you don't do that as easily?
No, it's much harder. It requires a separate app to be able to do it. So it's possible, but it's not a matter of just like hitting a button. It's, you have to actually go click, 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 click.
So someone really has to follow you on Instagram in order to see your stuff. And they have to search you out too when they want to see your stuff.
Follow them, they end up in your feed.
Right.
But okay. The feed is like Facebook. It's got an algorithm. So you might, you know, you don't necessarily see everybody that you follow.
What tools are you using now? I know that for a while, I think you were using Social Oomph, I think.
I've never used Social Oomph.
Okay.
I've used Sprout Social.
Sprout Social.
Which I like. I like Sprout Social. I don't use it. I just use it for reporting at this point, because they have a really easy interface. I use Hootsuite, but unfortunately, Facebook has set it up that you have to post natively. Using the Facebook Creator Studio, you have to do that on Facebook and on Instagram, because if you don't, things don't usually end up. If you use Hootsuite, for example, to post on Facebook or Instagram, it affects the algorithm and it never quite looks the way that you want it to look. So they've kind of forced all of us social media managers to use Facebook Creator Studio, which is actually not a bad tool.
I'm so old. When I go on Instagram, I don't always do it on my phone. Sometimes I want to put things and link to articles I have, and I try to do it online on a browser, and I just can't figure it out.
Well, you can't link to anything on Instagram.
No. I mean, but I want to post an image or a thing or a story. You know, you can put a story in your notes in your thing. You can link. You can't put any links in there at all.
In a story or in a post?
In a post.
No. You can't.
But in a story, you can?
It depends on how many followers you have.
I can't even find out how to put a photo when I'm online. I have to do it on my phone when I try to do it online.
Well, that's because Instagram is always meant to be a mobile app.
Right.
So yeah. Everything is easier to do on mobile for Instagram.
And are you using Slack?
I do use Slack. In fact, did you just hear the Slack go?
That's exactly why I said that.
I used to have the notification where she goes, hummus. But then I got so annoyed at this woman saying hummus to me all day that I just put it back to its normal.
I am shocked that people go on Twitter and scroll through feeds and look at stuff. I'm like, what could be a bigger waste of your time? If there's some really big person that you follow and you want to read their stuff, I get that. But like just looking and going in the comments, it's like, I've never done that. It just seems like a complete waste of time. And now it's just so toxic and unpleasant. It's like scrolling through Facebook. All I do is post my stuff and get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, I'm never on Facebook. If I wasn't a social media manager, I wouldn't be on Facebook at all anymore.
About Facebook and even, I'll say Twitter. I'll stick with Twitter. Film Twitter is actually quite interesting.
Oh, like if you follow sections of Twitter that I think are quite interesting.
But you have to wade through tons of stuff. And I used to have you used to be able to auto add people and auto delete people. Now it's so tedious to go in and unfollow like one at a time, you know. And what you're saying is for all of these brands that have these like massive follower counts. They're basically paying for them by advertising on the platform that they're gaining the followers on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the amount of followers you have has kind of stopped being an important metric a while ago.
How engaged they are.
In favor of engagement. Yeah. And shares, which, as I said before, sort of sucks. But yeah, no, it's mostly been engagement. There are still some companies that don't really get that.
Look at all the film festivals. Every film festival on their application, they say, what is your Twitter account? What is your Facebook account? And how many followers or likes do you have?
Well, and you see that too. And like when I reach out to a customer service on Twitter, which is really the only reason I use Twitter, I get responded to faster because I have 600 followers. Whereas when you look at somebody who has like 11 followers,
that would be me.
They're going to be at the bottom of the list.
Well, breaking news for you two folks who used to work at William Morris Endeavor or William Morris, whatever it was called at the time. The Oscars will now let agents vote on the Oscars. Agents can now vote for the Academy Awards.
How is that fair? That seems like such a conflict of interest.
Well, same thing for studio heads. Now they're always voting for their own movies or their own, you know.
Yeah.
Well, but the studio heads have to be voted in. To vote.
Well, whatever. Whoever's voting is always has a conflict of interest, you know.
But you still, still have to be voted into the Academy, right? They can't just, they're not Academy members because they're agents.
Well, agents were associate members without voting privileges. So now, after decades, they have become full-fledged members. Okay. So they're members of the Academy, they're agents, and
like
now
that?
They get to vote.
No.
Well,
no,
my
no,
grandfather, they're like, you never were allowed to vote. Now you are. They could do everything. They could do everything except vote. Now they can vote.
So basically what they're saying, Karen, is from now, I haven't read anything, but it would seem like there are members like publicists and like executives. I know executives who are members of the Academy, voting members of the Academy. They're kind of members at large. They're industry members. That's what they are. Except I guess because there was a conflict.
That's what they are now. Before they were associate members, which means they could do everything. Go to screenings, get screeners, but they couldn't vote. Now all agents who are already members are now members at large. Members of which don't fall neatly under one of the Academy's 17 other branches, but they do still get to vote.
I want to be a member at large.
I would just like to be anything. Yes. So I'm on Instagram. I am on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm not on TikTok. What's the next platform that I should be looking at and thinking maybe I should be there early?
I mean, arguably TikTok.
Yeah.
Not sure how I feel about TikTok yet. I mean, it's rising really, really fast. The pandemic has made it rise even faster. I question a lot about it. To me, it reminds me a lot of, in a way, kind of Vine.
Of course.
And the security issues behind it, I don't think young people care about, but there's a lot about TikTok that strikes me as very not right. I can't really describe it as anything more than that. I am clearly too old for TikTok. I mean, I get it. I can watch it and be like, okay, I get it. But I don't go down rabbit holes in TikTok the way I do on some other platforms.
So unless you're a content creator or a performer, I don't see the point of it either.
Yeah. Know?
Well, so we know we're on Instagram. People are doing lots of longer posts. They're writing a lot of text. They're not just doing images. Are there any tricks or strategies that people should be using on Instagram? If that's the thing that you think is the most effective, what are the smart things they can do to keep themselves active and show their personality and not bore people who are following them?
Stories. And I personally hate stories. But Instagram really likes stories. And I don't know about your Instagram, but my Instagram now, when I open it, instead of having just one level of stories that I have to like kind of sift through, now I've got like two. So it's now starting to take up more of my screen space, which is really annoying. But people who can do good stories, it's always going to be beneficial. I'm still old school that I like posting.
Yeah, so do I.
But, you know, my advice holds true for either one. Be visually interesting and be short.
And who do
well,
you
I am short. Sperling, we're both short. That's great.
I'm short too, so it's good. We're all good.
I don't think she really means that kind of short. But now who is doing, what celebrities or companies in the entertainment space are doing social media right?
I hate this question.
Name all your clients.
I hate this question because absolutely nobody necessarily stands out for me. And I think it's very personal. If I was going to look at celebrities, like I really like what Pink does. I like I like how she talks about politics. She talks about her family. It feels very personal. You can tell she does it herself. So, and you can tell celebrities that don't do it themselves. And usually they're not trying to pretend they aren't. It's something like the official, you know, Instagram or whoever run by.
What about The Rock? Dwayne Johnson or The Rock?
I've seen his. I hear he's very funny. He does it himself. Again, it makes a huge difference when you can do it yourself. And if I was managing a celebrity right now, I would tell them you've got to learn how to do it, one platform on social media really, really well.
Right. Don't try to do 20 things and they're all a little different. So focus on one and do it right.
Focus on one really, really and do it right. And Instagram, again, is the easiest one to do it because you can do it in terms of, you know, make it visually interesting, do videos, but you can also, there are people who use it to talk about news. Katie Couric. I love Katie Couric. She's great. She oftentimes will just post, you know, like a graphic that just lists that, you know, everything that happened that day in the news or whatever. And you can do that too. And so I think there's so many different ways to do a good job on Instagram that I would recommend that one to anybody who is just going to choose one platform. There's the people like the Alyssa Milano's out there who does a fantastic job on Twitter, but you've got to be really smart and really sharp to succeed on Twitter. It's a cruel, cruel place. And well, Facebook is not even important anymore. Facebook is only important in terms of groups. That's where the young people are going, just to talk in groups, especially during the pandemic. But otherwise, Facebook has just become an advertising platform.
What would you suggest? Okay, so Instagram, Showbiz Sandbox. We don't have an Instagram. How would Showbiz Sandbox capitalize on Instagram? Or should it not even bother? Would you say, you know what?
So you're on Twitter, right?
We are on Twitter.
Well, what performs well on Twitter?
We are on Twitter.
Okay. So, I mean, there are all kinds of ways that you could do this. You can make it very personal and have it just basically be about you guys talking about, you know, you're going to the movies or you're reading this book or whatever, like your favorite things that you're, you know, your favorite entertainment things. You could do that. You could be yet another news source. You know, this happened. I wouldn't recommend that because there are other places that do it better. I'm always about authenticity and making it personal. So just since I was not prepared for this question, that would be my first thought as something to do. Your own personal picks.
Michael, get on that.
Here I go.
And it doesn't have to be perfect. It's pretty easy to do a decent Instagram post or decent Instagram story.
And to explain to people who don't know, an Instagram story is where you're doing a video or you're...
Well, Instagram stories is what they stole from Snapchat, so which we didn't even talk about for a reason. And that is that you create content that disappears after 24 hours, might be 48 at this point, but I think it's still 24. Mm-hmm. And there, you can create, it's, you know, like a story of like your day. So if I wanted to create a story starting this morning, you know, if I was one of those people who love stories, it would be like, oh,
getting ready for showbiz.
Yeah. Here are my cats waking up. Here's my breakfast. You know, I'm getting ready for showbiz. And then I would probably be filming a little bit of this right now and include that. And there are lots of tools like Canva. If you've never used Canva, it is a social media manager's best friend who can create graphics really easily and for free. And you just, create, that would be like the story of your day or whatever.
Yeah, that Canva I have used, but not for social media, although that is
a lot of templates, a lot of really good templates, and it's so easy to use. So, but yeah, I mean, that's why I don't personally find stories interesting. I go through them and I'm like, unless it's about someone's pet, like I don't really care what they're doing all day.
It's like when you show what they're eating for lunch. I don't want to look at them.
Don't care.
Yeah. What you're doing is great. And do you feel like you made a conscious career decision to pull away from like trying to be the biggest company, making the most money to be a happier life? Was that a conscious decision? Because I did that as a freelancer. You know, I said, you know what? I never wanted to be on staff somewhere and have to be just told what to do and have to do things I wasn't happy about or didn't feel were fulfilling. As a freelancer, I got to pick and choose and only do things I was passionate about or people I liked.
I think it was a choice. I'm not sure. Looking back on it, I guess I would say it was an unconscious choice. I made the choice about probably 4 years ago to be happy and to avoid places that were making me unhappy and avoid being in a toxic environment. So by just kind of following my nose that way, I've ended up exactly where I'm supposed to be. So it was a choice, but I don't think I said I'm only going to start working for small businesses. I pulled away for a while, and I didn't work for 6 months. I didn't even look for a job for 6 months. And then people just kept hiring me back. People I used to work for, actually a lot of people that I used to work for, or friends of friends, and realizing that now I had the time to do it. And then you're like, oh, I really like sitting down with people and figuring out what their social should be. And so I developed a whole side business of being what I call a social media coach. And I will just sit down with you and just talk about what we think your social media should be. A lot of people don't want or need or can afford somebody to do their social, but they don't have any idea how to get started. And so
they need a coach for a brief period.
Yeah.
Social coach. I could have used that in grade school.
Well, thing, Karen, right? It sounds good. It's got a good ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I like it. Well, Karen, we're getting close towards the end of the show, so I would love you to weigh in on this letter that we got from a reader. They're talking about the COVID crisis and moving back too soon. Everybody can have a good opinion on this. Are we moving too fast, moving too slow? They're writing about from Victoria, Canada, and saying that they were...
No, it's Victoria, Australia.
Australia. Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought it was Alberta. So they're in Victoria, Australia, and they're saying, look, we were about to go to stage three, but now we're stuck back in stage two. Here's all the things that are going on. And the government ruling right now is that cinemas will be capped at just 20 people per cinema, screening room. So that's the cap. And they're like, that's going to be a disaster. That's just simply not going to work. And so they were asking, where did you put it?
Oh, I changed it. I didn't know whether, because that was last week's letter. This is a new letter.
Dear God. So that person said, are we going too fast, too slow? Should we put the economy first, or are we going to be damaging ourselves by trying to deal with the pandemic that we're going to destroy the economy forever? And my attitude was, look, it's a false choice. We cannot fix the economy and make the economy strong again until the pandemic has been dealt with, whether it's through a vaccine or through massive extraordinary measures that let us get back to somewhat of a social life, though not the same as before. So you can't make a good economy until you've got the Black Plague under control. It's just bad for the business when people are scared and don't want to leave their homes.
I mean, and we're learning that right this second, aren't we? I mean,
right.
Look at all the places that had reopened and are now closing again.
Yeah.
Well,
you can't say, well, we got to open our business again. I will say, however, that there's always nuance to be learned. Like, we can make the highway safe if everybody drove at 20 miles an hour. No one would die in a car accident on a highway if the speed limit was 20 miles an hour. But we won't accept that. So should it be 55, 60, 60? Every 5 miles you raise the speed limit, more people will die. And that's a cold decision. But that's what we do. And in certain terms, the pandemic, we know if everybody was forced to stay home and never left their house, we would stop it then. But we're not going to accept that. People got to go to the grocery store. They got to have some business. So we're going to have to decide what works. And in terms of cinemas, if you say only 20 people in a screening room, well, that doesn't make sense if you're talking about a 600-seat auditorium versus a 100 or 80-seat tiny little auditorium. So clearly there should be some nuance there in terms of what's the space. But me personally, I'm not going back to a movie no matter what until there's a vaccine. It just isn't safe to be in a room trapped with other people breathing the same air for 2 hours. How about you? Are you feeling like you're ready to go back to a movie if they were available and it was capped at, say, 30%? Would you put on a mask and go see Mulan?
No. But so this comes back to what we were talking about at the top of the show, which is how are movies and box office going to change? Because I don't see how a movie theater owner can sustain itself with 20 people.
They can't.
And also the box office, you can't, why bother measuring it, right? You can't have that. I think that the industry was changing anyway. And so people weren't going to the movies as much. You would know better than I would. But from what I understand, people were not going to the movies as much because it was too expensive. And so I think that in the future, we are going to have, people are going to go to movie theaters after there's a vaccine. But they're going to go to movie theaters only to see the big tentpole movies. So you go to see your Jurassic Park, you go to see the Marvel movies. And I think that everyone else is going to be watching movies at home. I think that this is video on demand's time.
You know, I was at a meeting of industry, and these are all people that make their living in the cinema industry. Now, mind you, they are also mostly older. you know, my age or above. So they would be falling on the borderline of the susceptible group so far.
Right.
And this was an industry event online, of course. And the question was raised, who's going to a movie this summer? Okay. And literally all of these people that make their living either working for companies that are movie theaters or making equipment for movie theaters or distributors, everybody was saying they're not going to go. I was floored. I thought, come on, guys, if you're not going, this is your livelihood. And if you're not going, then nobody's going
to
go.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I think we can disagree with that, because ask everybody who went to a bar
or a rock concert. Yeah, you know,
there will be plenty of people who would still go to the movies. The problem is that that's not going to make the pandemic go away, right? It's going to make it worse.
People will do that for a few weeks, but then when they start to pay a price and they see their friends getting sick, they will pull back again, even if the government didn't change anything. People, when released, were like, oh, thank God, I can go to a bar, I can go to a movie. But then when the hospitals start filling up again and their friends get sick, then they're going to wake up and go, that won't last forever. As you know, when you see the Black Death everywhere, you tend to stay home.
I mean, they will learn that lesson. Is any movie worth it?
No.
People go to bars because they miss human interaction. They miss flirting and they miss, you know, talking and being around people. I don't know anybody who's willing to risk their health to sit in a dark theater.
No, I'm not willing to risk my health to sit in a bar. I'm more willing to risk my health to sit in a darkened theater.
Well,
I don't like bars.
Hey, everybody's, that's because we're nerds.
No. But everybody's different and everybody has that thing they need. They want to be in public. I love going to the movies. Other people like going to the bars. Other people like going to the beaches. But none of them are going to continue doing that once you start to pay a really big, heavy price. You know, they will immediately at the first chance. Yes, they all head back to the bar. But then once people start getting sick again, I have a sibling who went to dinner with another couple, I believe it was indoors. That person went home, got sick. She's positive and she's fine, asymptomatic. She'll just have to be home for 14 days, but she's fine. Another sibling is at work with a coworker whose sister was exposed to something, you know, so he had to get tested. So for 3 or 4 days, we had to avoid him. I have another friend in Washington State whose sister is a healthcare worker. She just tested. In 3 days, I had three people all near me either test positive, living with someone who tests positive, or have a tangential exposure. And that hadn't happened this entire time. I've known other people in other cities who've dealt with it, but that was the first time it came that close. And you know, when that happens, that wakes you up and go, oh my God, this is serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this letter to the editor says, look, this is another edit. This is another letter separate from the one I was quoting from last week. And he's saying, look, what's going to happen if cinemas are limited to 20 people? They cannot survive. He says now, he or she says, now is the time to start freaking out a little, as if the current course does not take a turn for the better. We may be in a 20-person limit for over a year. With that level of occupancy, much of the major cinemas would not survive.
Yeah.
I look forward to your next show and more detail coming from the rest of the industry. Sperling, as you are in that circle of coverage, are some people starting to freak out from your perspective?
Well, I think I just kind of pointed out that people even within the industry are beginning to say, well, I'm not going to go back. Now, I agree with you, Karen. There are way too many people that are willing to go. The question is, here's the problem. In the U.S., because of what, I'm not going to get into the politics of it all, but we're on the rise again because we opened too soon. And if you look at actually the link this listener sent in, rt.live, you can see every state when their infection rates started to go up, and it is exactly when we opened up. But that said, if we can't get that under control here in the U.S. and movie theaters can't open, then studios cannot distribute movies. If they can't distribute movies here, are they willing to distribute movies in Europe first and in Latin America first, or in certain other parts?
Well, they're not doing great in the UK. They're not doing great in lots of countries. They're not ready to have cinemas opening up again. If they do, they're going to find the same problems we have. With China and the US closed, the number one and number two markets, you cannot release a $200 million movie. You cannot release Tenet or Mulan unless you're just saying, I'm going to lose my money. You know, so they're not going to release them because they would lose their money without the two biggest markets in the world. That just would be a dumb thing to do. You sit on the movie until you can release it and actually make your money back. You know, but don't worry, movies aren't going anywhere. Those people who are saying, oh, people have grown out of the habit of going to movies. No, going back 50 years, movie attendance has remained very steady. The box office grows because the population grows and inflation grows. But basically, people go to movies at the same level, even though they can access them a lot more in their homes than they ever have before. You can see so many movies on demand now with great home cinemas. It's amazing people still go to the movies. And while they don't do it just for the big blockbusters, those have been the big game for a long time now. So yeah, people will go see art films, they'll go see this and that, but it's always the Spider-Man, the Avengers, the Tenets of the world. Those are what are going to really draw huge crowds. And I don't think that's going to change, but it won't happen again until we get a vaccine, I'm afraid. And if until we do, cinemas are going to need some government support or they're going to shut down. There's no way you can make money with 20 people per screen.
Well, when we do get a vaccine, I'm hoping that we'll get the word out through social media, in fact. So, Karen, where can people find you? If you're a small business and need a social media coach, where can they find you?
Go to KarenWoodwardOnline.com.
Still there. Awesome. Huh?
Still there. And my Twitter is still... at Karen_Woodward. And if you love cats, follow me on Instagram, which is at KarenIsTheHuman.
Oh yeah, I'm following you. I saw you right there. I just looked at your cat like, just now.
Every single seems like Saturday, you have the cats waking you up and the step by step.
Diary of a Saturday morning? Diary of a Sunday morning? Yeah.
Yeah, the cat is right by the little cat house.
Oh my god, my cat houses, aren't they the best? They were gifts.
Yes.
Yeah, they were gifts. But Colin doesn't fit in the ski chalet because he's too fat.
He just sort of lounges nearby.
No, that's the Halloween house. He fits just fine in the Halloween house. But he does,
oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the ski chalet, the other one that he doesn't fit in.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by. It's been great chatting with you again and hearing all the good stuff you're doing.
You guys, this was fun. Let's do it again.
Well, that was great of Karen to stop by. It's the end of another show. We sort of covered our letters to the editor. You had great, thoughtful letters, and we dealt with them rather cursorily. I'm sorry about that, but I'm running off to take my mom to the doctor, and it's a busy day. So we appreciate your writing in, and please reach out. How can they do that, Sperling?
Well, you can write to dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. We're also, on the voicemails. You can call us 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. And though we may need some coaching, we're on Twitter at Showbiz Sandbox is our handle at Showbiz Sandbox. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/Showbiz Sandbox is where you can like our page, even though according to Karen, it doesn't matter. But you know what? You can subscribe to our show. That matters. In iTunes, the Google Play Store, Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free, you can rate and review the show. It helps us out when you do. It helps us out when you subscribe. All of that information, as well as links to Karen's work, links to all the stories we've discussed on today's episode, all of this information is on our website, showbizsandbox.com. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on their own website, whoismgmt.com. Michael Giltz has a website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
This week it's thankyouforlistening.com.
I have no idea what.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Oh, okay.
For 500 episodes. What do you mean? Was it for? It's a thoughtful shout out to our listeners.
Well, if you can't find any of Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry there, why not head on over to michaelgiltz.com, where all of his work is aggregated. Some of my work can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.